Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Namaste Radio. The intent of our programming is to increase awareness, inspire loving action, and ignite transformation and healing in our listeners, and through them, our world. Namaste Radio is brought to you by Namaste Publishing. Please join its interactive spiritual community. Communicate directly with authors, guest bloggers, and others like yourself who are spiritually seeking a better way of living. Connect, make friends, and be one with our new Namaste Global community at namastepublishing.com. And now, please welcome your host for this hour, Marie Bernard, on Namaste Radio, radio that will change your life.
Good morning and welcome to a very special day and time of Namaste Radio for a very special episode. Today we're going to be speaking about the importance of fathers because Father's Day is coming up this coming Sunday, and we focus so much on the importance of mothers in the family, and I don't really feel like there's enough focus on how important it is to have a father figure in a family. So today we're joined by Dr. Shefali Sabri, who is the recent Nautilus Gold winning author of The Conscious Parent. She has been on the show before, but she just recently won this award, so congratulations to Dr. Shefali for that. And we're also going to shortly be joined by, oh, here he is, David Ord. He is the editorial director of Namaste Publishing. He is also a former minister and theologian, and he is an author of many books or many audio programs. Pardon me, I'm recovering from a cold right now, so my mind is a little foggy. But he is also a single father, or was a single father, and so he's going to be talking about the challenges and the importance of fatherhood. And so welcome to the show, David and Dr. Shefali. Hello.
Hi, thank you. Hi, David.
Hi. Hi there. Still a father. He may be 27, but the job doesn't go away.
I guess it still counts. So welcome to the show, and again, congratulations, Dr. Shefali, on your Nautilus Gold-winning award. What does the Nautilus Award really mean?
Well, I think they stand for recognition of books that are transformational in nature and have a different message than the conventional books out there, and they really take a risk in who they want to endorse and are willing to, you know, really pay attention to the voices that may not necessarily be quickly picked up by mainstream, but have such a transformative message. And they highlight those voices, and I think they do a wonderful job in really bringing to the fore messages that need to be heard, but they get lost in the din of mainstream media. Mm-hmm. So it's been such an honor that The Conscious Parent was awarded this.
Yay! Wonderful. I'm so excited for you, and definitely everyone needs to hear about The Conscious Parent, especially if you are currently a parent or thinking about becoming a parent, or you know a parent, you could give it to them as a gift. So get The Conscious Parent. And David, how are you doing?
I am doing just fine, Maria, enjoying this beautiful weather here in Phoenix.
Wonderful. And so your son now is 27?
Yes, he is. And he's been away in Louisiana and should be back, I think, sometime later this week.
Oh, and so he's going to celebrate Father's Day with you?
Yeah, well, hopefully. And we have really changed our relationship over the years. When he was 18, I suggested he no longer call me dad, unless he cares to, and that we simply become David and Julian. And it felt a little awkward at first, and the result of that is that we have simply become best friends. He will tell you I'm his best friend, and I certainly will tell you he's mine. And we a lot of the time we actually live together. Sometimes he's gone for months, sometimes he's here, and we really enjoy each other's company.
Oh, that's amazing! And
yeah.
Dr. Shefali, from a psychological standpoint, I know a lot of parents, when they're raising children, they try to be the best friend, and that might not always be the best way to go about things. So what's your view as a psychologist on being friends with your kids?
Oh, my goodness. You know what I would say about that. I absolutely would endorse that. But psychologically, I'd like to touch on something more profound that David was talking about, which is the missing element of that kindred relationship between father and son. You know, I think predominantly we have been misguided to believe that mothers play the only pivotal role. And, you know, we give so much focus, like you said, on mothers, but we don't realize how powerful that father-child bond can be. And I think we mothers ourselves do a disservice to our families because we take so much of that burden and so much of that pressure onto ourselves that in many ways we alienate fathers. You know, when I did research for my first book, It's a Mom, What You Should Know About the Early Years of Motherhood, many fathers would complain to me that they felt ostracized, they felt alienated from that intensity of the mother-child bond, and they had to later find their functionality. And I think this is a myth out there, and we women really perpetuate this. What do you think, David? I know you raised Julian for many years on your own, right?
Yes, I did, most of his life on my own, actually. And his mom and I split up when he was still one. She was in his life until just after he was two. And then she did not see him for a whole year, and only then for a week. And she'd see him for a week for the next few years until he was able to fly, which was, I think, when he was about five. And then he would go spend some time with her in the summers. But basically, I played both roles. I was very blessed, however, in the churches where I was a minister, to have people who were able to step in and be wonderful in his life for him in the way that grandparents might have done. Mm. And in fact, one of them just died about the turn of the year, just before Christmas, I think. And Gwen Donaldson and her husband, John, met Julian just when he was turning five. They were running the Sunday school at the Presbyterian Church where I was a minister, and they one day asked if they could take him to McDonald's for lunch. They just fell in love with him. They became grandparents, and then John died, I'm guessing 14 or 15 years ago, I don't know. And he stayed close to Gwen, seeing her very frequently, talking to her often, right up until while he was there when she died. And she's been like grandparents. So I've been very blessed, not only with them, but with others who have been there, who have, as Hillary Clinton says, it takes a village. And so I think it's important. You know, there is a book that I read, about 26 or 27 years ago, which I found intriguing. It has to do with intimacy. And if the name comes to me, I'll mention it to you. But basically what this person is suggesting in that book is that if only women raise, let's say in particular male children, what has to happen is at some point the boy's going to be realizing he's a little different. He's not like girls. So in order to define himself, he's going to have to put up some kind of walls around himself. Now, what happens in the case of a girl who's been raised by a woman is that she doesn't ever put up any walls around herself because she's being like mom. And this book is suggesting that part of our problem with people really growing up whole is they need both parts involved. A boy should never have to put up walls against a woman to prove he's male. And a woman should, and a girl should never just stay totally porous, which is why so many girls have grown up being doormats and walked on. It needs the ability to develop boundaries that are realistic both for male and female. And I think that can only be done when we've got both parties involved and not just parents, because I think that the parents alone have got their blind spot. It takes a village. It takes a lot of people being involved to help someone to develop in a healthy way. I think the book was called Intimate Strangers by Louise Rubin.
Mm. Yeah, what a lovely premise. But I agree with you that, you know, and it doesn't have to be a traditionally set up marriage of man and woman necessarily. But I think what David
is saying. It can be gay partners.
Right. But what David's speaking to is that we still need to have the multiplicity of genders around us for children to be able to relate to both genders. It's important for them to do that, and especially, you know, for girls, like you said, David, growing up, the presence of the father is so important because our culture is dominated by the male gender, and women need to know how to relate to them with a sense of equality, autonomy, empowerment. And when fathers are missing, as they are so rampantly, especially in certain sections of society today, our girls are growing up without that sense of empowerment because they don't know how to relate to the predominant gender or the gender that they see as having more power. And then they don't grow up with that sense of, sense of security. And like David said, then they're porous, that boundary doesn't exist, and they're always searching for that father figure.
Yes. You know, one of the things that's terribly important in this, the fact that Julian and I can now be very close friends, and that we can, you know, spend months to living together at times, and whenever we choose to do that. What had to happen for that to come about is a person has got to become their own person who is self-differentiated. Now, I want to say that differentiation is different from individuation. This isn't just about me finding out what I want to be like and then growing up to be it. It's about my ability to be who I am in the presence of another person without losing myself and without having to push them away or becoming so attached to them that we're like Siamese twins joined at the hip. So when a few years ago now, probably about 5 years ago, Julian and I were to take a trip to Boston. I was to do a couple of days of evaluation and training connected with my work at that time. Must be about 6 years ago, I guess now. And he missed the plane. It was a very early flight, and he was coming from Baton Rouge, and I was coming from the North Shore of New Orleans. And he simply missed the plane. So I got up to Boston, and when I was having lunch with the people who were involved in my training, they said, well, maybe it's good that he missed the plane. Maybe you all have just got this sort of emotionally dependent relationship in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, so many people cannot comprehend that the American, probably Western, but I think more American than anything, of mom, dad, two kids is simply not the norm of the world and not the norm of history. And it ought to be possible for whole families, several mm-hmm. generations even, to live together in a home together without anyone losing who they are and becoming emotionally enmeshed with the other. Mm-hmm, and this is such a crucial thing that's missing in our culture. I watch this soap that's on four times a week, half an hour at a time, from Britain. It's one of the most popular shows in Britain and has been for 30-some years, I think. It's called EastEnders, and it's set in the East End of London. And there's a lot of drama involved. It's my only sin, but I enjoy it. And in that drama, what you see is how people, because of the economic circumstances today, are being forced increasingly to live together, to share their lives together. Children are being parented by several people who are part of the larger family and friends and so forth. You know, this is not a bad trend that's happening today in our Western world, where people are being forced closer to each other and having to learn to work out what it means to be themselves and not lose themselves in the presence of another person.
Absolutely.
So that has to happen before you can become really good friends.
That's a great point.
David and Shefali, I wanted to take a step back because you were mentioning before about gender identity with regards to when boys are only raised by a female, and as an example. And what do you think about this news story that's pretty recent, these parents
yes.
that are keeping their kids their gender a secret? They're making such a big deal about it, they don't even want to tell people what the kid's gender is.
I can't wait to hear what Shefali will say about this.
Well, you know, I think what they're trying to do is, you know, really oust this long-held tradition of gender stereotype. You know, they're really trying to lambast it, and, you know, I understand where they're coming from, because it is imposed upon us without our, you know, as infants, without our consent. You know, we get put, and I came from India, which is a heavily male-dominated society with stereotypes that are so entrenched that despite the most modern of parents or the most open-minded of parents, that cultural stereotype seeps in through the walls, and before you realize, you become one of the herd. So I understand where these parents are coming from, except, however, nature is going to catch up, and life is going to happen to those children, and sooner or later they're going to have to teach their children how to, as David said, differentiate, find their voice, find their unique voice amid the din of society. You know, so I think their efforts are well-intended, but I think they will lose out in the end, and I think what's more valuable instead is to teach your child how to find your inner voice, because society is always going to be there. This is life. And to resist something so dramatically is just going to create an equal or greater opposition. But I understand where they're coming from, you know, because it's a cry out to society to stop imposing the baggage of ancestors that have not been examined, have not been really called into question, and people are getting tired of it. And our children are suffering for it, you know, and we see it happening, especially if your child does not fit into that box. And then what, right? So it's those parents who have that child that is not, quote-unquote, in the normal part of the bell curve that are pained by this reality of having to make their kids fit in, and they're fighting back, I think, and it's a well-intended battle, but I think more importantly the message needs to be on teaching all children how to diversify and be comfortable with their diversity.
What's really fascinating to me about this is the uproar the very idea has created in so many people.
Yes,
I mean, why are we so on the attack unless we are not seeing something in ourselves that we've denied? You know, I think so many men, they have a terror of the tender. They cannot come to grips with the fact that they have a whole nurturing, tender side to them. And they're so afraid of this, lest they should be a sissy or something, you know. It's a sad thing that that is still so predominant in our society. Men have got to own their tenderness, and women have got to own their power. Now,
exactly.
On the other hand, a decade or two ago, I mean, I got lambasted by a number of women in my congregation at times who wanted to assert that there are no differences between men and women. And I was so sexist for even suggesting there are. Well, hopefully we've grown up since that, and we're realizing men and women are different. But the differences are not weaknesses. They're strengths when we capitalize on them.
Absolutely. But, David, you spoke about two things. One is owning the masculinity and femininity in each individual and allowing our children to understand that they can step inside their masculinity if they're daughters and not be afraid of that. But, you see, we as parents are terrified when we see that in our children because, again, they're not going to fit in. And then in our pseudo-concern for them, but really real concern for our own egoic pain at watching that, we then try and nurture them to socialize according to the norm. But if we could really step aside the gender boxes, and I think these parents who refuse to speak of gender are trying to step out of these boxes and into that liminal space where there is no label, because it really is about qualities within a person versus just a fixed gender. They, you know, what they're speaking to is let's all hone in and diversify the inner qualities we have, which could be masculine and feminine, rather than just stay stuck on the outward box of gender. And that's why people don't like what they're talking about, because we don't want to be in that liminal space. We want to know, is it a boy or a girl? And if it's a boy, then it's blue. And if it's blue, it's a train. And if it's a train, it's a police officer, whatever the traditional norm is. And if it's a girl, then it's pink. And if it's pink, it's a teacher. If it's a teacher, it's a nurse. You know, and that we have such fixed and rigid ideas, but we're doing our children a disservice because we are disavowing that our girls could be heavily masculine and our men, our boys could be heavily feminine. And why not? Because this is the wholeness from within. And this is the disservice we do to ourselves and to our children.
You know, we live in this idea that the world is dualistic, and that is really quite nonsense. When have you ever seen anything that's so completely white that it's just white, or completely black that it's just black? The world isn't built that way. Even our whites come in different shades, and our blacks come in different depths of blacks. And the entire world, actually, as I just sit here now at my iMac, and I look out the window here at the beautiful surroundings around me, I don't see anything that's white or black. Not a thing. It's just all kinds of shades of colors. And that is that way in life. I mean, what are we going to do with people who are born with both genitals, of which there are many?
Right.
It's this notion we have of these extremes of polarity, hard and soft. When have you ever felt anything that's hard or soft? There are so many degrees of softness. You lie on a mattress, and they according to what you spend and what kind you get, the degrees of softness are immense, and so is the hardness. The hardness of something that can cut diamond is very, very different from the hardness of my desk here and so forth. So life is a kaleidoscope of all of these possibilities. And the wonderful thing is to allow our children to emerge where they emerge on that spectrum and to encourage them to be fully themselves in every way, not clones of someone else.
But I think, David, what we're seeing is that there is this reality, which is the father absence. You know, you had it very different, where the mother was absent, but there is this rampant and current, it's very current, it's happening everywhere, where fathers, they may not just be absent because of negligence, they're absent because they are pigeonholed into this rigid role of being the breadwinners, providing very masculine energy of leaving the home and being very concrete and outside the house. You know, they fix the house, they, buy the things that fix things, and they make money that help us build our lives. But they're not really expected to or pressured or even now want to be within the home. And I think this is what's affecting our children so much today, especially our teenage girls who are, you know, becoming promiscuous earlier and earlier. Mm-hmm. Our boys are suffering from maladjustment and psychological, you know, dysfunctionality because we don't have that father presence. And our men are suffering. The fathers, I believe, are suffering because they, as you said, David, are being cut off from this nurturing energy, from this caregiving, warm, dependent energy. They're not allowed to be dependent either. So look at the disservice our men are being put through by themselves and by society by being pigeonholed in this very rigid way of looking at what fathers are supposed to be and what they're supposed to do.
Now,
yes, I mean,
why can't you
be the kind of father you want to be? For some, that's going to be one who gets out there and plays rugby or football or so forth with the kids. And for the others, it's going to be someone who loves to paint and do music. What's wrong with a father? He doesn't have to fit a mold. I never brought my son up in any of the stereotypes. My son is a very masculine boy. He loves to play sports and all that kind of thing. I'm not big into a lot of that kind of thing. I'd rather swim or ride my bicycle or mountain climb, which are solitary things, not team sports. But, you know, there were others in his life who drew out those sides of him when he wanted to express them. So a father needs to be what he is. The key thing in all of this for a father or a mother is that we are authentic. If we are real and we are authentic, there will be nothing about who we are that has a need to impose our version of fatherhood on our child. The consequence is that our child is then free to grow up to be uniquely their version of a man or woman.
Yeah, but we are so afraid of doing that, right? So if tomorrow a man comes home and says, you know what, I want to do the laundry and I want to do the diapers and I want to do the dishes, and you, a good mother, wife, go and earn the money, it just will just throw society in a loop. And that's why we're not doing that. We have very traditional households where it's just expected for the man to go out. And this is just so sad because the man is losing out so much. Those fathers are losing out by not being there raising their children moment to moment. And, of course, many of them choose not to because it becomes a way of life now for them. And their psyches are just uncomfortable being in that liminal space of caregiving and nurturing and relating.
I got fired. I just want to add to that comment, if I may, Marie. I got fired from doing Julian's laundry when he was 8, and he's done it himself ever since. He said, "Dad, you pink too much of my stuff." You understand what I'm saying? You pink it. I get colors in there, and so he fired me. So he's been doing his own laundry ever since. My son is an incredible cook. I grew to love cooking over the years. When I first got married many, many years ago, I couldn't boil an egg. It would either come out watery or I forgot it and burned its backside. But I learned to cook really well, and now I love to cook, and I'm very present in my cooking. But my son is an incredible chef, just marvelous. He makes the finest food I ever get, and I'm talking about even going to restaurants. So men can be whatever they want to be according to what their bent is, and I never taught him this. He got it from within himself.
Mm-hmm. Well, here in Canada, actually, we're talking about how the men are missing out, especially on these early years of development with their young children. But now here in Canada, there is paternity leave. So women take mat leave, but men can now take, I'm not sure how long it is, it's not very long, but they can actually apply to have paternity leave so that they can be home with the young baby.
It's a step in the right direction, isn't it?
It sure is. I mean, just in that, right, that there's no talk here in the U.S. for men to take that leave. So they're expected to step back into the breadwinning role immediately, disconnect from that mother-child bond, that symbiosis, which is so important to experience in the infant's early years, and they are just thrown out into the harsh world again. And I just, you know, fathers get a bad rap often, and I just feel that society pushes them so much and pressures them so much to disconnect from their femininity that they are really the ones going through the biggest trauma because of it and just not realizing it and just overcompensating all over the place. But they're the ones really who are suffering the most. You know, we women carry the burden and we're tired and we're pressured to make all ends meet, but we are getting that connection. We're getting the relating. But men are just severed from that.
You know, we have two friends who just 2 weeks ago moved to North Carolina. And we will miss them a great deal because they were a couple who are not traditional in a lot of these things. They have 6 children ranging, there are 5 girls, 1 boy, ranging from age 6 up to about 18. And one of them is going to be going to university here. But the rest of all moved over to North Carolina. Now, he has been the breadwinner for many years, but she used to be, years ago, before she had children, a really effective person working in accounting. And what's happened is she suddenly got a job offer, and the market's not good in what he does at the moment. And so they've picked up stakes and moved, and she now is the breadwinner, and he's staying home. And you know what? They love it that way. She likes going out and working in the accounting business. And he loves being at home with the kids. He's a very masculine man, a solidly big-built man. This is you can't mistake this man for someone who's wimpy. And he just is a marvelous nurturer at home. They've done these are actually 6 of the finest behaved children who are not in any way suppressed. They are truly themselves that I've ever come across. So these roles can be reversed. They can be switched in and out at different times because we all need to develop the full spectrum of who we are so that we can do whatever is required.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful story. It's just so rare to see, and it's a travesty, really, that we don't see men in the kitchen enough. We don't see men with the infants enough. But I think that teenage girls, you know, and I keep coming back to this because the research really shows how more than any other population, it's the teenage girls who are suffering the most from that lack of that father figure. Because, and I think it's the traditional way we think of men, you know, that masculine energy, because they are women, our girls, we need to know. Either we have parents, you know, mothers or other caregivers who allow us to nurture that masculine side of us, but because this is not often the case, it's usually the father who typically gives that information, gives that data to girls on how to relate with masculine energy. So when our teenage girls don't have that, and then they're out in the world dealing with men and they haven't had that language at home, they get lost. And they don't know how to negotiate that power outside the home. They don't know how to talk with men. And they're looking for that father figure. They're looking for that missing masculine energy. Perhaps as their soul is questing, you know, their higher self is questing that they develop that masculine energy themselves. But in the short term, in the present moment, that psychological effect is damaging because they lose themselves in that.
Mm-hmm. You see people losing themselves in relationships, especially teenage girls, all the time. And it's a tragedy to me that our school system emphasizes all of the things that really aren't that important. And the things that really matter in life, we don't seem to teach at all. You know, I look back at my education now, and the geometry, the algebra, the mathematics, the Latin I learned and so forth, I have used none of that in my life. If only I could have learned the skills of how to be a differentiated person, how to be whole, how to relate to one another. If we were teaching human relationships in our schools and drawing the parents in and working with families in ways that they become functional, how much more profitable this would be. Then when I was 37, I went to the Graduate Theological Union of Berkeley. You know, I made A's in Greek and Hebrew, because I was at a time in life when instead of hating Latin as I did back then and hating geometry, I'm a person who now, my son's the same way. He watches programs on the Discovery Channel and all that. I do. We're interested in learning and all of that. But it comes when it's natural. What we need to be learning when we're young is how to just not earn a living, but how to live.
Exactly. I mean, absolutely. You know, I work so much in the school systems because I'm a therapist and I work with families, with teachers, and they're just, you know, disconnected. What we're teaching is disconnection, not only person to person, but within the psyche, because we're teaching our kids to not naturally be aligned with what their interests are, naturally honor where their bodies want to go, but we're programming them into the preconceived idea of what a good person is, a good student is, a good learner is, which has really nothing to do with that individual child. But again, there's fear. Well, fear is at the base of everything. And the fear is that there'll be anarchy because, God forbid, we have spirits that listen to themselves and follow the beat of their own music. So fear is the undercurrent of everything. And that's why we just stay stuck to these boxes. And gender is one of the most political boxes that we just don't touch. We don't want to touch this because it's God-given and it's understood that it is the way it is. But no, it isn't. We have imposed the qualities of gender upon gender. It does not have to be so. And just because it was so in the, you know, hunting and tribal in times when the men had to go out and, you know, earn the, make, you know, kill the meat for dinner, it doesn't have to be so today. And especially in our modern world. But it's just that's one of the things that has stayed, and it's become the way we view men and view women, and we are failures if we don't fall into that box.
And I think you are raising a daughter who knows how to speak up for herself, right?
Right. Very masculine energy, very assertive, even aggressive, I dare say, and very, at times, threatening. You know, I will mutter under my breath, you know, can't she just listen? And what do I mean by that? Can't she just listen? Meaning, can't she just be submissive, dependent, not know what she wants, so my life will be easier? But that's the kind of, right? But that's what's the undercurrent in every house. We want parental dominance, and in that, we don't want so much masculine energy. However, if our boys are excessively feminine, we throw a fit as well. So, again, we want the gender divide to be very clear and very precise.
when I was editing your book, The Conscious Parent, when I came to the place where she says to you, I could almost hear and see it. She says, "You are a mean mummy."
Right. Oh, I get that every single day. The other day she said, you know, "You're the boss of me and Dad is the boss of me. Who am I the boss of?" And I felt appalled that she would call me a boss. That's such a masculine, aggressive term. But from the child's eyes, that's what parents are, and that's what the adults are. And she was just crying out that, "Can I already be the boss?" And this is not necessarily a healthy sentiment that she has. You know, I'm probably raising someone who, when she can be the boss, will run wild and, you know, devastate those around her. But again, it's so poignant that children have that yearning, and even girls, and she's a girl's girl in many, many ways, but to allow that masculine energy. And I think that's what we're talking to. Can we allow the feminine energy in our men, and can we allow the masculine energy in our daughters to come forth? And can we as adults not just be restricted across the gender divide, you know, and not just stay on our side, but dare to cross over?
David
and Shefalia, I want to ask you, David had mentioned earlier about the importance of being present and authentic as a parent. And so what about when you're in a situation where you're a mother and perhaps you're involved with the father of your child and he's really an unhealthy influence? Is it better to have an unhealthy mess of a person helping you raise this child, or would it be better to be just a single mother without that influence around?
Oh, good question. David, do you want to take that on first?
No, I was actually thinking this was a marvelous one for you.
You know, what is dysfunctionality first? Now, if you're speaking about obvious abuse and obvious psychosis, then of course we would love that influence to be limited in the child's life. But again, our children are going to meet all sorts of, dysfunctional people, problematic people. And if this is the parent, then we just have to, you know, we can't sever connection based on perceived dysfunctionality or perceived psychosis. And who are we to judge what is better for our child? You know, I see this a lot in couples who come to me for counseling. You know, one of the couple is always more righteous than the other at any given point in time and always believes their parenting style is better. And we women are really good at doing this. We put our men down, we put the husbands down, we know what's best, but it can work the other way as well. And they often say to me, you know, "I'm so conscious, but my husband isn't, or my partner isn't. You know, should I limit his or her influence on the child?" And I look at them with incredulity, because we aren't there to judge how our child relates with the partner. We don't want to throw them into abuse. So again, I have a disclaimer, but if the behavior falls within the bell curve, then we cannot curtail that connection that a child has with its parent based on our judgment. You know, and I think we should leave our children. You know, I often tell parents, the child has this parent for a reason and the parent has this child for a reason. Let them work it out. You know, as much as you don't like it, if it's not falling again into abuse or obvious psychosis, you let it happen. And you teach your child and you have an open communication about it. And and as David said, authentic communication, authentic presence, authentic being. Children forgive. Children have no conditionality towards their parents. We parents have conditionality towards our children. Children are the most unconditional in their love. They will love their parent no matter what. You know, there's that beautiful movie with Sean Penn and I think Dakota Fanning. Have you seen that movie where he is
Sam?
I am Sam. He has developmental disabilities and the
wonderful
lawyer.
Wonderful movie.
Yeah, and that's what I'm speaking to. Who are we to judge, right? So Michelle Pfeiffer plays the attorney, and she at first was all about separating father and child, and she then realized that you don't break this bond, you know, unless there is something really glaring. So I'm all for, you know, fate or whatever you want to call it, throwing people together, and we have to just work with it. Again, if it doesn't fall into the glaring, sections of abuse or dysfunctionality, we need to let children and parents work it out, you know, and there's beauty there, there's wonder there.
There have been, you know, over the past number of decades, there has been a basic approach through much of psychology, which is one of, all the focus has been on boundaries and on abuse and how this person's toxic to me and how I've got to get these toxic people out of my life. And it's been one in which so many counselors have advised people to get out of this marriage, get out of this situation. There is an entirely different paradigm that really works magnificently. I learned it from Dr. David Snarch. It's spelled S-C-H-N-A-R-C-H. He wrote, first of all, he wrote the professional book, Constructing the Sexual Crucible, which is for therapists in the main. And then he wrote Passionate Marriage, Resurrecting Sex, and his most recent one, Intimacy and Desire. Now, you might think, well, what have they got to do with parenting other than how children get into the world? But they have everything to do with it because they come from a paradigm that is about drawing out people's resilience rather than pandering to their weaknesses. If people think of themselves as abused and victims and poor me and what life has done to me, they are denying who they truly are. And certainly on this radio program, coming from Eckhart Tolle's work and Michael Brown and so forth, the Namaste authors, and Shefali with the Conscious Parent, we are about people finding their true center, the divine essence within them, and the power and the resilience. And so what we want to be doing with our kids is helping them, again, within the bell curve that Shefali mentioned, but we want to be helping them to find their strength and their resilience in the situation. Now, Eckhart Tolle did a book. It's 32 pages, full color, beautiful, beautiful book, wonderfully illustrated, called Milton's Secret. And Milton is a little boy who's being bullied at school. And I won't tell you the story, but adults need to read that book because it is about finding our conscious center so that we can be calm and at peace and whole within ourselves no matter what is going on around us. And when we draw out our resilience, then our children draw out their resilience. And if they get into abusive situations, which they will in life, they will be able to handle themselves extremely well.
Exactly. You know, I love what you just said about the paradigm. It is a paradigm, and I don't want to call it a Western paradigm and an Eastern paradigm, but the paradigm of if the relationship is not working, you leave paradigm, that paradigm. Really, with it is the philosophy of you throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yes.
And that's why divorce is rampant in this country. That's why fathers are absent, because when it gets too difficult, the notion is you just leave. Rather than the paradigm that you're talking to, David, when it gets difficult, you see it as a mirror for where you need to grow. And what a different paradigm that is. That speaks to the essence within all of us, which is always, you know, glorious, worthy of resilience, of connection, of capacity. It has this enduring essence to it. And we need to teach our children that, because if we teach our children that if something is too difficult or if a relationship is not working according to my needs, I get to leave, then they're never going to learn, and they're going to always have the fear that they will be abandoned if they're not good enough. So you speak to something that's more enduring, David, and more elemental. It's the paradigm we hold and how we look at relationships philosophically.
You know, we have just put out Michael Brown's book, The Presence Process. There was a new version of it written recently, a revised version, updating it. And we have just now put it out in audio, and it's available on namastepublishing.com. But in working with that production and bringing it to the public, I am just awed by what Michael does in here to get us to see that the situations we get ourselves into, even when they feel awfully painful, are there to reflect back to us our own immaturity, our own inauthenticity. And if when someone is driving you up the wall, let's say it's the other parent, you've got a dad or a mom, and they're just making it hell for you to deal with the thing of raising your child because of the divorce and so forth, if in that you begin to look at what is it in me that is responding in the way that is driven up the wall, rather than why are they doing what they're doing? Why am I bouncing off the ceiling? The whole paradigm shifts, and it becomes an opportunity for growth. And then you begin to thank what Michael calls the messengers of life, who come to show you what you can't see about yourself, because life is kind of like a play that's being put on all around us, and the people who are the key players coming into our life are reflecting back to us our areas of where we are yet undeveloped, and we have not allowed our divine center yet to blossom. So if people want help in this, they should read your book, The Conscious Parent. They should read Milton's Secret by Eckhart Tolle. And they should read Michael Brown or listen to the audio version of The Presence Process.
Yeah, because what we're speaking to, David, I think the connecting theme here is that there is no such thing as the other. The other only exists as a reflection of the self. And
yes.
If we can understand that, then there's unity, there's oneness, then there's a welcoming energy in our lives, and our children get bathed in this, and they grow up with this inclusive philosophy where everyone is part of the growth process. And then, you know what this does? This is not just about the other being welcomed in. Our children grow up with this secure sense that they are part of the world and that there is no one to be ostracizing off or to ostracize them. So Marie, to your question, you know, we as families raising children need to impart to our children that imperfection is nothing more than a judgment that we impart on the other. It doesn't really exist. And if we can teach our children that, then they grow up understanding that everyone is allowed to be who it is they are and that there is no judgment really. So again, except if there's, you know, outright abuse. Our children can really grow up in families that stay together. And a marriage is just a certificate. It's the authenticity and the bond between people that we're speaking to here, not necessarily the traditional structure of marriage.
And I think with this issue of the children. Sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to clarify
a point to what you were saying.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to clarify what Shefali, you would consider outright abuse. Obviously, there's physical, like hitting or sexual abuse, but what about the way we speak to children, yelling at them, swearing at them, being inappropriate with them in ways that are maybe not quite so glaringly obvious, but would still fall under the lines of abuse?
Yeah, that's a tough one, you know. But again, I don't think the answer is to sever connection just randomly. You know, I think we're quick to run and less inclined to offer healing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, again, if the child is being hit, spanked, and inappropriately treated, definitely I think the onus does fall on the healthier partner to create that boundary and become more rigid and create those lines, because our children cannot protect themselves. But it is that personal call within each parent, and it's a hard call to make. And listen, there are no right or wrong answers. No one on the outside can tell you what's abuse, so people shouldn't feel like, you know, they're going to be judged if they leave now. But I think as a culture, we're more driven to leaving a difficult situation than healing it. And that's just what I want to draw the attention to.
Yeah. I think that object relations comes into this. You know, when we're children, we don't see things as all of a piece. We see things as either black or white, as we were talking about earlier. So someone's either all good or they're bad. You're either the mean mommy or mommy, I love you, you're so wonderful. You know, and children don't yet have that ability to integrate all of that fully. So I think it's important when you're dealing with a parent who might not be easy to get along with if you've gone through a separation, a divorce, or if you've never been married and the father or the mother come into the life but they're not working together. I think that it's important to be able to be honest about our own weaknesses. Rather than necessarily dealing with the weaknesses of the other person, let's take a situation in which the other parent has the child, say, every other weekend, and they are very strict, whereas you're not. So things that are nothing in terms of an issue for you, they are something the other parent grounds them for, and instead of going to the zoo, they had to sit in their room all weekend. Now, you can't change the other person, but what can happen in a situation like that is the child can begin to understand the complexity of human beings. If we can let a child see our faults and our weaknesses and also our strengths, they move from seeing us as just black or white objects and begin to integrate the fact that the parents have got good things, other things they've not yet grown and developed in, and that we're all in this growth pattern together. So I think it's very important never to put the other partner down. And in the situation with Julian, I never did that. But we did at times talk about the dynamics between us. We talked very honestly. I talked about where my weaknesses were, why the marriage went wrong, and all of that. And I let him see me as a real human being. Now, that enables him to own his mixed emotions, because we all have multiple emotions, multiple motivations for almost anything we do, and to begin to accept the boiling pot of what life itself is. It is a mixture. It is not clean, cut and dry, black and white, and that's part of the maturity. And I think when we do that, then a child can begin to accept the other parents when the other parent doesn't do things the way you might.
Yeah, and it's the same as when a child comes home and says, "Mommy, you know, whatever, Gwendolyn was
yes,
so mean
yes.
to me. She was so mean to me today, and she just snatched my pencil and broke it in half." And of course, I hate her. So the tendency of the parent immediately is to say, "Oh, how dare she? How could she?" And duh, you know, and because we believe we're empathizing with our child, and we believe that we're bonding and meeting our child's needs. But the way I usually respond to that is, you know, first, non-dramatically, I try to. And secondly, to blend it into the tapestry of the entire personality. So I'll say to my daughter, "Oh, you know, maybe she was just having a mood today, just like I have moods and you have moods." And, you know, honor her mood and know that tomorrow she'll have another one. You know, so teaching her the enduring quality of personality, which is, you know, we fade in and out of moods, and this does not mean that one person is now bad or good, or one is a victim and one is a, you know, the victor. So again, that duality, the duality. How do we as parents allow our children to understand that dualities are an illusion, and don't subscribe to them? Because the minute we do that, believing we are helping our child, we're actually doing them a disservice, because the next time they are mean, they will judge themselves as such and then disavow that part of them and shame themselves for daring to step in that mean space or that ugly space. But like David said, if we can own the shadow and own that we all have a shadow, and it's just part of that enduring nature of personality, it's just on the continuum, then there will be no split-off parts of ourselves, because the danger of split-off parts are that we project it onto others and we hate the other then. But what we're really talking about is hating the self.
What's so important in this is to be able to stay, as you've been talking about, in the tension, instead of walking out and dividing mm-hmm. over it, mm-hmm. unless it, again, it becomes so extreme that it's physically dangerous and so forth.
Right.
But to be able to stay in the tension and to sit with it and allow it to be. You know, you mentioned about parents swearing at their kid. Well, I'll tell you, I've sworn at Julian and he's sworn at me. And since he's been an adult, we have sometimes been eyeball to eyeball, face in face, and gone at it with each other over some issue. But we don't walk away from it. We stay in it, and we work through the tension, and we talk it all through, and that's why we have such a strong relationship today. Heat is part of what makes us. And when my son says to me, "Dad, you are," and he'll tell me what I am, I have learned to say, okay, what part of what he's saying is true?
Okay.
What part, even if he's wrong 98%, where's the 2% of gold in this for me? And we have really had some knockdown dragouts over the years. Once, when he was 17 years of age and I was living on the North Shore of New Orleans, I got reactive about something, and he wanted to go out and wanted the car for the evening. He didn't have his own at that stage. And, or maybe it was his car, I forget now. Anyway, he just said, "Dad, I'm going to do this. And I'm old enough now to do this." And so I went nuts about it, and I was sitting outside, and we had a rather large property out front, open space. And the next thing I know, he'd gone back into the house. He walked out, got into the car, turned it on, and went. And I yelled, "Where'd you get those keys?" He had a spare set of keys, and he drove off and did what he needed to do. I said, "I'll call the police." I mean, we can get very bizarre. Now, I'm not that reactive these days. This is a lot. This is 10 years ago. But we can get bizarrely reactive to our kids at times. But the thing is, we stay with these things and work them through. We don't cut each other out. The consequence is you end up with a marvelous father-to-son, father-to-daughter, and so forth relationship.
It's a great story.
Now, we're getting close to wrapping up the hour, and I just wanted to ask both of you, now, we've been talking about the importance of fathers, the importance of having both the masculine and the feminine energy in child rearing. Now, what if you are a parent who finds yourself in a single parent situation through no fault of your own? How can you incorporate the opposite gender energy in your child raising?
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, if you are a single parent, to really examine what views you unconsciously hold about the other gender, because chances are you may have ended up in that single parent position out of some, you know, contention. So it's very important to notice what you hold towards the other gender unconsciously, because that will be communicated to your child. And I think the second best thing you can do in every situation, whether you're with both genders already as a traditional household or not, is to incorporate as many people in your child's life as possible, and to open your house up, the space within your house, to allow other mentors to come into your child's life. You know, the other day I was with a 17-year-old, and she said to me, "You know, but who are you to me? You're not my parent. You're not my friend." And I said, "You know, just consider me an aunt, a guardian angel. It doesn't matter." And then I stumbled upon the word, and it was mentor. And it's so important for our children to have as many positive mentors as possible, so that we parents are not the only ones influencing our children, because we're not always going to get it right. And if we open up the space for that, our children will benefit.
From his very earliest days, my son had children who were Asian, children who were African-Americans, children who were gay, children who were every spectrum as a part of his life. And the beautiful thing about that is when they get to be around children whose customs are different, whose way of being is different and all of that, it's not about – Shefali's book is so wonderful on this, The Conscious Parent. It's not about imposing our mold on the child. When we expose them to this wide range of people, they then get to see reflected in themselves all these different aspects, and they get to now choose, who am I? What do I want to be in my life? I think it's so crucial that we are really opening up our lives to include many people. It takes a village to raise a child.
Beautifully said. And we just have a couple of minutes left in the show. I want to thank both of you, Dr. Shefali Sabri, author of The Conscious Parent, and David Robert Ord, the editorial director of Namaste Publishing. Thank you so much for being on the show. Is there anything that you'd like to add? We can go a little bit over time if you need to. Before we wrap up the show in preparation for Sunday's Father's Day event.
I just hope that people will get Shefali's book, The Conscious Parent. You can get it through bookstores. You can get it on the various online places. You can get it from Namaste Publishing Direct, namastepublishing.com. It's mailed very quickly to you from within either the United States or Canada, and we can mail all over the world. And I also want to say the audio book, I have two books of Namaste Publishing, but one of them is an audio book, Lessons in Loving, A Journey into the Heart, really impacts this whole topic too, and that's uniquely available on the Namaste Publishing site.
Wonderful, thank you. And Dr. Shefali, how about you?
Well, what I'd like to say is what makes, I think, The Conscious Parent, my book, a special one is that, and this is feedback I've gotten from parents and from fathers in particular, is that it so opens up the parenting, the traditional parenting notion, and opens it up into the heart of the matter, as David talks about, the relationship. So once it does that, fathers begin to see how they can play that pivotal role in their parents' lives because they're not bound by the traditional caregiving ideas that have dictated what parenting is about. And that's what this book does for parents, I think. It opens it up. It allows parents to see how they can uniquely impact their children's lives, and fathers in particular can find themselves in this book and see that this is not just for mothers. The caregiving, the nurturing is not just for mothers. It shows them a direct way that they can influence their children's lives. And so I recommend for fathers to get this book because it allows them to step aside the traditional notions of what it means to be a father and really engage with their children at a very deep, profound level.
So true.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both for being on the show today. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you, and happy Father's Day.
Thank you, Marie.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank you, Shefali.
Thank you, David.
Okay. Take care. Namaste.
Namaste.
So that was Dr. Shefali Sabari and David Robert Ord, and thank you so much for joining us. I hope that you have a wonderful Father's Day coming up on Sunday, June 19th. Mark it on your calendar. And if you are interested in checking out any of the books that were mentioned on this show, David Ord had recommended The Presence Process, The Conscious Parent, as well as Milton's Secret by Eckhart Tolle. And you can find all of those titles on our website, namastepublishing.com, where we also have an entire global community that you can join for free. There are author blogs, there are discussions, there's a spiritual dictionary, and so much of that is free. So please do check us out at namastepublishing.com. You can sign up for the newsletter, which is a wealth of wonderful information and inspiration that you'll receive every month. So check out namastepublishing.com. Thank you so much for being with us. We will be back, I believe, next week. Yes, on Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, we will be speaking with Janine Ross. And she went through an amazing inner transformation when she lost pretty much all the money that she had and found more inside of herself and realized that money wasn't as important as she thought it was. So please do join us next Tuesday for another episode of Namaste Radio. And in the meantime, be well, take care, namaste.
Thank you for joining with us for this hour of Namaste Radio. For further spiritual insights and sharing, please join us in Namaste Global Community at namastepublishing.com. If you enjoyed the show, please add Namaste Radio as a friend, favorite the show, and tell someone about it. Sharing this show is a precious gift that's completely free. Thank you. May you enjoy each moment of your day. Namaste.